This is the Human-Centric Investing Podcast with John Deal, where we look at the world of investing through the eyes of our clients. Take it away, John.
Hello, financial advisors. This is John Deal, Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets at Hartford Funds.
Welcome to Episode 10 of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. Joining me today is Tim Sanders. Tim is a New York Times best-selling author and founder of Deeper Media Incorporated. Welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Hey, glad to be with you, John.
Before we get started, we'll be referring to a workbook today that listeners can download at hartfordfunds.com/essential. Again, it's hartfordfunds.com/essential. With that, let's get started. Tim, I know you've worked with Hartford Funds to create content about the concept of taking client relationships from optional to essential. Can you give us an overview of what that means?
Absolutely, John. Being just a good option to your clients is a bad strategy in this world of hyper competition and shiny new options. To be successful over the long haul, you need to make the leap from optional to essential. I believe that for professional services providers, financial advisors, retirement planners, there are a series of challenges going on right now to your ability to retain your best clients. And because of these challenges, it's really important for us to redefine our value proposition, no longer confining what we offer to just financial services and thinking at a bigger level about the real problem that our clients are trying to solve and how we can create a truly sticky business. And just to review, and this is all covered in the workbook that I encourage you to download, the first challenge has a lot to do with the change in your business model. John, speak just for a second about the fiduciary legislation and how that changes the business model for so many financial advisors.
Well, it's funny, Tim, because oftentimes, you know, the big moniker of the fiduciary conversation is that we have to put our clients' interest first, right? So we have to act in the best interest of our clients. I always kind of chuckle to myself because how is it that we can put our clients' interest first if we don't even really know what our clients' interests are? So I think you're right, Tim. The future of financial services goes beyond just those boundaries, which is what we talk about on the podcast quite often, the boundaries of investment advice, and goes further beyond that. So I think I know exactly where you're headed.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you think about a change from a transaction commission-based model to fees for advice, that also presents a real challenge because the research we show says it's going to cause a lot of existing clients to kind of rethink how they achieve their wealth management.
Absolutely, for sure.
So the second big challenge is automation, and in particular, robo-advisors. So we have some really good research from Business Insider that is in the workbook that basically says that the robo-advisor growth in assets under management is growing triple digits and has been for the last 3 years and will be for the years to come. And their assets under management will be in the trillions in just a few years. While that doesn't really impact your best clients who are looking for more than just simple advice from a robo-advisor, it will cut into one's business and will be, our research says, very appealing to millennials, which leads us to the third challenge, the final challenge, and that is the millennial wealth transfer issue. We know that millennials just have a different way of finding advice. They think advice in the world should be free. They've been socialized by Google and other things to believe that. And while the wealth transfer is probably 5 to 10 years out there, the influence transfer is today. I can't tell you how many fellow boomers that I know rely deeply on their millennials to teach them how to do a variety of things, including how they should buy their next car, plan their next vacation. And, you know, soon, I believe that financial advisors will need to have a very sticky value proposition because they'll often need to really engage with those millennials at a higher level than simply providing advice. So that's the backdrop for today's podcast. When our book of business and its retention is challenged, then we have to elevate our value proposition. And one of the things I thought about, John, from my own personal career, and I was going to mention this on the podcast today, if your competitor solves a higher order problem than you do, bad things happen to your business. And let me tell you why I believe that. So I was talking, I was an employee of Yahoo for a long time, to give you some background, and I was talking to one of our ex very senior leaders, and we were talking about, you know, what happened to Yahoo? Specifically, how did Google come along so quickly in 2002 and 3 and 4 and just take our business from us? And he told me something. He said, Google was solving a higher order problem than Yahoo. Yahoo was trying to make it easier for us to find things or connect with people. Google was trying to organize the world's information. And that was a much higher order problem than we were solving. And over time, they built a stronger business. And so that's something I think about a lot. We've got to solve higher order problems than just retirement planning or wealth management.
Yeah, and Tim, you know, as I think about this, you mentioned challenges from technology, challenges from gender, and we're talking about going deeper with our clients. As you think about that, Tim, is it realistic to think that we can have essential relationships, as you define that, with all of your clients, or what's the process we need to really kind of look at our book with as we begin to embark on this?
Absolutely. So if you're going to redefine your value proposition, you're going to solve much higher order problems like what does it take for someone to be successful? What does it take for someone to build a legacy? What does it take for someone to achieve total peace of mind? Wow, that's higher order problem city. You're going to have to give that person a lot of advice. And advice outside, you know, the confines of what you do as a financial advisor. It means you're going to have to do a lot of research. You're going to have to become not only a walking encyclopedia, but the ultimate curator for your clients. And quite frankly, John, that can increase the amount of time you spend on a specific client engagement by hundreds of percents, like 500%. But you know what? If the client is high value, it's worth it. So, as I've worked with a lot of professional services firms on how to really become essential, we say you got to start with who. And in the workbook that we have to go along with this webinar, we've developed a form, and it's a client prioritization form that allows you to take a look at the revenue value of a client along with the intangible value of that client, such as their loyalty, ease of working with them, their influence in the community, and their ability to generate referrals or help you secure clients. When you look at all of that together, our form will help you score on a scale of 1 to 10 where your client sits in terms of your priorities. And my advice is that you start with the top 10 to 20% of your client base when you start implementing some of the things we're getting ready to talk about. Because in the beginning, being essential takes a lot of time. It's like building up something from nothing. But once you've started to practice this over the quarters or even over the years, you're going to become more efficient in how you give great advice and curate information on behalf of your clients, so you'll be able to expand to 30, 40, maybe even 50% of your book of business. And I think it's that laser focus on really pouring it on where it matters most that can make a huge difference to your business.
Well, Tim, so first we want to take a look at our book of business, and we want to examine our current relationships. So once we kind of define those clients, if you will, maybe we work through that worksheet you mentioned to get to our list that we want to start with. I know, Tim, you talk about a couple of things that you call are requirements to becoming essential. So one of those things, I know one of the first things you talk about in the workbook, you say we should become a fountain of knowledge. What do you mean by becoming a fountain of knowledge, and why does that matter to our clients?
So that's a phrase that we literally pulled out of deeper media research when we went and interviewed a variety of investors or buyers of professional services. And we asked them, in the face of these challenges, the ones we've just talked about, who can you imagine not doing business without? In other words, who's so essential to your life you'd never replace them over faster, better, cheaper? And the first thing many of them talked about was this idea that I gain insights that I didn't even know I need. I get information solutions 360 degrees around my life. And then several of them specifically said, my broker, my advisor, my wealth manager, she is a fountain of knowledge. And the reason this is also important, John, is that while it is challenging to be in professional services, think about how challenging it is when you're trying to build a legacy, when you're trying to create a retirement plan that doesn't just take care of you, it takes care of your whole family. That's an incredibly challenging and complicated issue, putting a lot of pressure on us to learn as investors or to learn as high net worth individuals. And our advisors can solve that problem for us either by teaching us what we need to know as a fountain of knowledge or by curating what we no longer need to spend time studying. And so the point I want to make here is that there's a big difference between being a fountain and a fire hose. So one of the things that we learned from our research is that the best of the best advisors or brokers or attorneys or accountants, they actually take work off your plate as a client. So, for example, one of the anecdotal experiences I had is that one person was talking about, he was an investor, and he said, I kept feeling like I was missing out on this Bitcoin thing. You know, it's an alternative investment for him. And so he said, you know, I was going to buy some books. I was going to subscribe to some blogs. I was going to listen to all these podcasts. I was really going to try to educate myself on all things blockchain and crypto so I could make a decision on whether I needed to do it. Well, guess what? His advisor, she had already, her and her firm, done this research and really collapsed it into just a few pages that he could read to really understand if it fit his profile. She was also able to kind of take off his plate a decision criteria about what kind of investment a person should make into such a speculative alternative arena. And so the client says to me, you know, this saves me hours and hours and hours of time. And that time that she saved me will probably outweigh any potential returns I would have gotten on that alternative investment for the first 3 to 5 years. So there's a classic example of tackling a complex subject by learning it deeply and then crystallizing it in a way where it could quickly be transferred to an existing client to actually add a lot of value from a productivity standpoint, not just from an information, you know, learning standpoint.
So, Tim, I know you've got a number of things to have us think about in terms of becoming a fountain of knowledge. Let's say as an advisor, I say, all right, well, let's think about it, Tim. You know, every day we're bombarded by so much stuff, right? We've got emails that come from our firm. We got emails that come from clients. We get, you know, people send us links with articles to read, and we read lots of articles and publications, so we usually start going down the rabbit trail on how do I focus this education? What's the process to becoming, in your eyes, this fountain of information?
So
fountain of knowledge.
I believe it's really important for us to stay on top of media and reading reports, this, that, and the other. But let me tell you something, John. The one thing I've seen, and not just from research, but my own life, the one thing I've seen that really differentiates you in front of a client is your commitment to read books. Long form education. Not blips, not short articles, not white papers. Entire books that help you tackle complex subjects. And as a person who's written 5 books, I can tell you they're not necessarily that interesting, but I guarantee you when you decide to read a book, and let's go back to this topic of Bitcoin. If you decide to read a book on blockchain technology or cryptocurrency or, you know, this space, you can learn so much in 5 to 6 hours at a deep level by understanding the construct of an idea, case studies of how it plays out, insights and advice points. And what's interesting, John, is that once you've read that book cover to cover, then you have the ability to speak very deeply with a client about it. And if the client's really interested in knowing more, or if the client really wants to read that book, what a wonderful gift that could potentially be. You know, by the way, check your firm's policy on gifting. But in my experience, one of the best gifts I've ever given were the insights from a book, a copy of that book, along with my notes. But what I've learned is it's not just like reading a book every once in a while, John. I think to become a fountain of knowledge, you need to make a commitment to read a number of books every year. And my recommendation is to read at least 6 books every year that stretch your resume and give you more deep conversational material for your best clients.
Tim, I like what you say too about the types of books we should read. As you're putting together a reading plan, what should I, an advisor, how would I allocate that reading to your different category of books?
Hey, that's a great question. And we cover this in the workbook. I talk about reading rotation. So some people read 6 a year, some read 12 a year, not to brag, not to boast, but along with my toast, I read about 24. And I'm telling you, if I don't have a reading plan to rotate the types of books I read, I'm going to burn out because I've been doing this for 15 years. Okay. So here's the idea. A third of your reads should be core to your business. So core means having to do with wealth management, financial advice services. So that's a third, because you got to stay on top of your game, right? That's your fundamental platform of how you get clients. Then the second third of your reading should be on topics that are adjacent to your industry. So for example, reading about the millennial mindset, how they find things, how they solve problems, how they influence each other. That's adjacent to financial advice. The reason it's adjacent is because of the things we talked about, wealth transfer, influence transfer, but it's important. And when I was working for Mark Cuban back in the 90s at broadcast.com, that's where he taught me this idea that you've got to have edge level curiosity. He didn't just read books on computers and information and the World Wide Web. He read books on adjacent subjects such as finance for startups, such as branding for companies, such as employer-employee relationships for talent management. And those all come in handy, stretching your resume. So think about what's adjacent to your core, connected to your business. That's a third of your reading. The final third of your reading should just be interesting to you, something that really piques your interest, and it's nonfiction, it may be business, it may be biography, it may be history, but something's telling you, I should read this. So for example, I've been reading a couple of things recently on what makes an idea viral, right? So we hear a lot about viral video or this post went viral. And so I thought it would just be interesting to read a book by a guy who's literally an algorithm scientist about what the difference is between something that's kind of popular and something that spreads like a virus. That's just interesting. I can't tell you, John, it's necessarily adjacent to my space as a researcher or lecturer. It's not core to what I do, but it's interesting. And you know what? Somehow, I find things in the interesting category, they always tend to come in handy down the road in a way that is not only valuable, but surprising, and delightful to our clients. So that's my reading rotation, and it's a good way for you to approach the 6 you're going to read this year.
So, Tim, I know we've talked about sometimes as advisors, especially if, let's say, we're a little more senior in our industry, sometimes we're looked to by others in the industry to kind of be mentors. You've shared with me a couple of stories about how being a mentor can actually help continue our effort to become a fountain of knowledge. How does that work in your mind?
So you need to take a very strategic approach to your mentees. You've got to pick your mentee, and you've got to pick your mentee with intention. You've got to have a specific curriculum for that mentee, and you have to empower that mentee to give back, because when you help someone by mentoring them, they really want to repay the favor. And if you're picking the right person, what you're going to create is a virtuous cycle of teaching and learning and learning and teaching. So let me just share a short story with you about the real process of mentorship. Stanley Marcus Jr., he's the son of the founder of Neiman Marcus, decided to mentor me back in the late 90s when I was really going through a huge uptick in my career transition. So I was going from just sales guy to manager to leader of a very large group of people to overseer of a huge platform that had millions of customers. And after a few conversations with me, Mr. Marcus determined a few things. He decided I had what he called heroic qualities. And I'm telling you, that's his words, not mine. And what he meant by that is that he admired my ambition. he admired the challenges I was trying to take on, but he also at the same time saw that I was going a little bit too fast. So he kind of looked at me like Obi-Wan Kenobi looked at Luke Skywalker. It's like, you need to learn more. And in particular, when he engaged me, because you should only mentor heroes, he taught me, people that are going fast, but, you know, you can help them. He engaged me to solve a problem, and the problem was my lack of understanding about customer relationship management, or CRM techniques. So he identified me as a good prospect of a person that's worth investing time in. He engaged me with a specific curriculum, and then for the last 15 minutes of all of our lunch meetings, he would empower me to teach him what I knew about what was going on in the World Wide Web, because as a longtime retailer, that was super interesting to him. So towards the end of all of our lunches, he'd ask me a few questions about the World Wide Web, one of the reasons he chose me, my expertise and ambition in that area, and out of a sense of reciprocal gratitude, I'm telling him everything I know while he's taking notes. And I remember during one lunch, I asked him, I said, Mr. Marcus, why are we spending so much time with you asking me questions? You're the expert. And he smiled. And he says, mentorship is one of the greatest learning opportunities in your life. If you pick the right people, give them what you've got and open up the door to learn. He said, if you do it this way in the future, you will never get dumber in the act of making other people smarter. And within those conversations, John, he taught me the secret sauce of being a great mentor and letting that be one of your most important learning platforms, along with being a great relationship platform. And so the way I kind of interpret all this for this podcast is that for financial advisors, you should always have a mentee. And don't limit it to someone that works for you. Don't limit it to someone that's very, very junior to you. I use that example here, but what I've learned is peer-to-peer mentorship is effective, because if you're engaging to solve a specific knowledge delta, then that means you can mentor your clients. You can mentor other FAs at your firm. You can even mentor prospects who aren't yet your clients, and that may be one of the ways they see you for a lifetime as an essential partner to them. And if you think, listeners, if you just think about the teacher that you care about the most in your past, that's what they did. They gave you a gift as a hero for the next leg of your journey, and it was called mentorship. That's really something we can do to supercharge our business.
Well, Tim, we talked a lot about a lot today. We talked about, you know, these steps of becoming a fountain of knowledge. And I love the term you use, becoming a curator of knowledge, because it's not just about gaining the knowledge, but it's knowing how and when and where to apply that knowledge. We talked about mentoring. We talked about reading rotation, so on and so forth. And unfortunately, we're about out of time today. I know we've only had a chance to cover that first essential requirement that you talk about, which is becoming a fountain of knowledge. It's only one of three ways that I know you recommend that we can deepen our client relationships. So we really would love to have you back for a future episode on discussing those other two topics. But as we conclude today's episode, if I were to ask you one thing that advisors should start doing today to become a fountain of knowledge for their clients, what would you leave us with?
I want you to ask yourself, for those top clients, what's an issue they're grappling with right now that's complicated and would require a lot of work on their part? And how can you and your team study it, crystallize it, reduce it to a very simple set of actionable insights, and deliver that to the market in such a way where the client says, wow, you took that off my plate? I think that's a good starting point. And for FAs in very individual basis, what you can do is make that commitment today that I'm going to spend more time learning. And I'm going to learn not just about my business, but everything connected to it. I'm going to stop sleeping on planes and start reading books. I'm going to listen to audio books while I'm driving to work or working out or coming into the city on the train. And just to give you an idea here of how to get started, in the workbook, and John, you'll tell them one more time how to get it, on page 16, I give a list of six books that I think for every financial services professional are must reads. And just pick one of them and read that book cover to cover and make a commitment to do it over the next month or so. I want to make a promise to you. When you read a book like that and you carry it into one client conversation, that book will have $5,000 of career equity to you. That's a heck of a return on an investment that's less than $30 and probably 6 to 8 hours of your time.
Well, Tim, that's awesome. It gives me, and I'm sure all of our listeners, at least some good ideas of what to think about and where to start. And again, for those listeners that might not have caught it up front, that site that Tim referred to where you can get the workbook that connects to this podcast is hartfordfunds.com/essential. hartfordfunds.com/essential. And with that, Tim, I'd like to say once again on behalf of our listeners and from all of us at Hartford Funds, thanks for taking your time today to share your wisdom with us. And we look forward to having you back on a future podcast.
Absolutely, John. My pleasure.
And for all of those listening, we'll look forward to speaking with you on another episode of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. Thanks and have a great day.
This podcast is intended for use by financial professionals or in conjunction with the advice of a financial professional. It is intended to be educational in nature and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice or fiduciary advice pursuant to ERISA rules.
Tim Sanders, founder of Deeper Media, Inc., is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Hartford Funds,